on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and Register reporter Peter Jesserer-Smith discuss the ongoing crisis of Christians in the Middle East. And for something completely different, Jeanette talks with Father Charles Sikorsky of the Institute for Psychological Sciences about teaching psychology to future priests. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Peter Jesserer-Smith, is the Register's Washington correspondent. Before joining the Register, Peter was a Catholic freelance journalist and a 2011 graduate of the National Journalism Center. In 2014, Peter traveled to Israel, Palestine, Jordan, and Lebanon as a part of his coverage of the crisis of Christians in the Middle East.
Peter, this week you had the opportunity to hear a couple of lectures by the Coptic Bishop Angelos. He is from the United Kingdom, and he's a church leader in the Coptic Orthodox Church, which is the largest Christian church in Egypt and the Middle East. And he had some very important things to say to journalists about how to cover the crisis of Christians throughout the world. What did he tell the journalists at these meetings?
Well, it was very interesting. I've had the opportunity to speak with Bishop Angelos twice. Once in person and over the phone, and he's a very well-educated, very erudite man. And one of the things he stressed is that we reporters have a very noble profession, but we need to keep clear of sensationalism. Hmm. And what he meant by that is we really need to delve into a story. We need to report not only the facts and not simply report what people say, but what they mean. And a lot can get lost in translation unless we do that. So he very much said that we need to really get into what the context of the culture and the situation is. And frankly, I think we've been able to do a good job with that in our own reporting.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear you say that. What were some of the examples of the ways the story gets misrepresented if you don't have that depth of knowledge or the context?
Well, there are a couple different ways in which that happens. One of the things is that it's easy to generalize the situation of Christians in the Middle East, to say that a huge generalization to say Muslims are persecuting Christians, when that's an overgeneralization. It's flat out not true. In Lebanon and Jordan, for example, the Christians and Muslims get along very, very well. Egypt, the situation is improving between Christians and Muslims in various areas, but some areas are better than others. That's one example. And another example is the Egyptians were very angry when their second revolution that overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood, which was persecuting the Copts, the Coptic Christians, as well as Muslims they didn't like, was branded in the U.S. press as a coup. From their point of view, what was happening was a popular revolution which the military was backing. And that was a crucial and key difference. And when the United States press didn't report it that way, they felt very misunderstood and very hurt by that.
Yeah, so I guess the work that Bishop Angelos does is extremely important because he travels frequently to try to help people understand what these key differences and these very sensitive issues are. So it's important.
Absolutely.
That you had the opportunity to hear him. I think one of the other areas of concern that he had involved social media. And as far as like my own use of social media, I've seen a lot of stories. I've come to be aware of stories about Christians in the Middle East, about persecution through social media. And so I've seen that as something that's been hugely positive in getting the message about social media out there. It seems to be some solidarity happens on social media with Christians.
Absolutely.
Throughout the world. Yet, he expressed some concern about social media. What was he concerned about?
Well, yes, he did. I mean, he did highlight that there's that positive aspect, as you mentioned, but there's also a negative aspect in which there's a temptation for people to spread information immediately without verifying it or without understanding whether it's prudent or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, there are a lot of stories out there that will make blanket generalizations about Muslims. And he said, what this does is it ends up fueling hatred. It ends up fueling misrepresentation and hatred, and that's not good. But the other thing also is that he warned people against playing into the hands of ISIS, the Islamic State terrorists, because ISIS posts its videos of atrocities on social media. And he was saying, if it's horrible, don't look at it.
Why pass it along? Right.
Exactly, because all you're doing is you're spreading their propaganda, their message of terror. And he said people have to really start to ask their governments, look, if it's illegal for somebody to send a video to torment me in my mailbox and threaten it with jail time, why isn't it the same thing legal to do the same thing via social media? And that's something he thought we should consider.
That's a very important discussion. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see where that goes with all of these social media conglomerates and how that discussion plays out. Because right now, that kind of censorship is not a very popular discussion. But I think one of the things we try to do at the Register is cover the story in depth. We certainly show that while Christians are being persecuted, also minority Muslim groups are being persecuted. But there's a lot more of the story to tell. And your trips in recent years, last year, I guess, to the Holy Land a couple times, really gave you an opportunity to see the culture up close and personal. And you've told me in the past that something changed in you when you saw that. What happened when you went to the Holy Land last year?
Well, my experience in the Holy Land has been just absolutely amazing for me personally. And I think it's akin to, I really think it is like falling in love. And I had a great opportunity to visit both Israel and the Palestinian territories. That was fantastic because when you start to talk to people, when you see people in the context in which they live, to be right there, you had such a great sense of walking in the very land and footsteps that Jesus did. Mm-hmm. And his apostles, and when you go to the Holy Sepulchre, and you can be right where Jesus was crucified and buried. You can go and touch the western wall of the old temple, knowing that Jesus was walking in this place, and the apostles as well. It gives you a real sense of the rootedness of Christianity. Jerusalem all of a sudden becomes mesmerizing, and this image of Jerusalem in the Bible just starts to really pop out. But that's the great thing, is that in my experience, not only in Israel and in Palestine, later in Jordan and Lebanon, you get a sense of how rooted the Christians are here, and really why it's important to pay attention to the Christians, wherever they face discrimination or wherever they face persecution, because they're rooted here. Our faith is rooted there. And that's really why we got to pay attention to what's going on with them.
And you feel the loss even more when they are expelled from these lands that they have such deep roots in. So
absolutely.
Makes perfect sense. Now, what are some of the positive stories or the stories that are worth telling that aren't really being told about Christians in the Middle East?
Well, I think there are a number of them. And it's an area which Bishop Angelos indicated that we have a very vital and important role to play here. And I just know from my own experience when I was in Lebanon, there was a great project between Christians and Muslims about promoting better religious understanding and peaceful solidarity, especially to youth. It was called the Adyan Project. And in Jordan, there's a similar story to tell about how King Abdullah II has really been an enormous defender of the Christians there and has encouraged his people to show solidarity with all these Christian refugees that have come in. The Iraqi Christians are very hurt from the betrayals that they experienced at the hands of their neighbors in their own country. And it's a beautiful thing I saw when I was over there was seeing all these Sunni Muslims, basically comfort them and try to say, no, let us show you what real Islam is. with their kindness. It was beautiful. And I got hold of a neat story that I'd love to pay more attention to, called the Valuable Girl Project. And it's a project that is going on between Copts and Muslims in Egypt, where Coptic girls and Coptic girls and Egyptian Muslims come together, and they learn about each other, and they do charitable works in common, and they start to have an understanding. And that's where the key is the future is going to be built on these good relationships.
Respectful relationships. So that sounds like a great story, a great Register story. Speaking of Register stories, we've got one on the website right now at ncregister.com called 11 Ways to Help Middle Eastern Christians. So 11 Ways to Help Middle Eastern Christians. It's written by Susan Clement, and it's just some very practical tips for those of us in the U.S. To be able to do things like offer up small annoyances or little sacrifices for the persecuted Christians, or to do a work of mercy with the intention of the persecuted Christians, to say, a short or a decade of the rosary for the persecuted Christians.
Absolutely.
Really just asking for Christians worldwide to support the persecuted Christians through some voluntary act, an intentional act of solidarity. Do you
absolutely
have anything that you would add to that list?
Oh, absolutely. And I really wanted to jump in here. Bishop Angelos was telling us that if Christians here really want to give their support to the families of the 21 Coptic Christians that were martyred by ISIS, he's established a fundraiser. It's at justgiving.com/whenleftbehind. That's justgiving.com/whenleftbehind. And everybody who donates there is going to be able to support the families that were deprived by these breadwinners. And not only that, it's going to fund an economic development project there as well, so that people don't have to go to Libya like those 21 men did in the first place to look for work. They're going to be able to stay at home and have work. So that's a great way that people can show solidarity with the martyrs and their families.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Peter, for being here today and telling us this story and helping us stay on top of what happens to the Christians. So
absolutely.
We'll talk to you again.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
When we return, how do you feel about psychology in the confessional? This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, provider and protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Father Charles Sikorski, has been president of the Institute for the Psychological Sciences since 2007. He joined IPS after finishing his licentiate in canon law at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome. Father Charles also has degrees in philosophy and theology from the Regina Apostolorum Pontifical University. He'll be talking with Jeanette about the importance of teaching psychology to future priests.
Father Charles, in recent months, the Register has published a few stories about the intersection of psychology and faith. And at the Institute of Psychological Sciences, where you work, this connection between psychology and faith is what you're all about. Yet, when I look over your biography, you've studied law, canon law, philosophy, theology. How did you get involved in psychology?
Okay. Well, my role here is the president of the Institute, and one of the things actually that got me really inspired about this new mission to work here was while I was studying canon law, reading some of the discourses that St. John Paul II had written to the Roman Rota about the church annulment process and the role of the psychological expert. And he spoke of this great need to form psychologists who were trained and who understood a Christian anthropology, a Christian view of the person. And he really, in my mind, laid out a mission statement, not only for IPS, but really for Catholic psychology. And it all centers, as he wrote in so many different ways, about with the human person being at the center of everything and the proper understanding of that. That we have, we live in a world where there are two extremes, two different views about human nature. One that he called would be overly pessimistic, where, you know, we have no free will, we're basically no different from, you know, a dog or a horse. We found, you know, we follow our instincts and our passion. And on the other side, there's an overly optimistic view of humans, right? That we're not really bound by any limitations, and we can define who we are without respecting nature, biology, and all these other things. And so a Christian perspective is basically, it's based on understanding that we're essentially good, but we're wounded by original sin. And while we have free will, there are certain things that might condition that somewhat and so forth. And so that really needs to be the basis for any sound psychology. And that's a long way of answering your question. That's how, through canon law studies, I've been really just convinced the importance of this mission. And over the years, I've had, and also on one hand and the other, is this pastoral experience. You know, we're, as priests, rightfully, much of our formation is in philosophy and theology. But on the pastoral level, we really do not study much about psychology per se. And yet, once we're out in ministry and doing pastoral work, so many times we run into situations where maybe the moral advice is easy or the spiritual advice is not that difficult, but we're trying to apply that to a particular person with a particular background, experience, particular psychological situation that can be complex and tricky. And so,
sure.
From the perspective of a priest, I realize just how important it is to understand deeply and profoundly human psychology and some of the more common problems that you come across.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it seems like there are many reasons why a focus on psychology may be needed in seminaries. And, you know, not too long ago, the Register did a story by Kathleen Knobb, a freelance writer for the Register. And in that story, she identifies how counseling is being made more available in the seminaries. And this, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting trained in counseling, although we can talk about that in a minute, but that many of the seminarians are actually taking advantage of counseling services, you know, a psychologist who is on staff at the seminary to help them through their own problems. Why might that be necessary today?
Well, first of all, many of the problems on a psychological level begin with one's family background. And, you know, the last 40, 50 years, we're all well aware of what's been happening to the family unit in our culture. And that has consequences. And as we all know, many good Catholic people had to struggle through different difficult family situations or perhaps are from divorced or broken families. And we know that many of these young men coming in today, just by percentages, some of them are going to have those kinds of situations in their background. I'd say that's one of the most important factors where it's necessary. You know, all things work together for good for those who love God, but from the abuse scandals in the church has caused the church to really look more at formation and how can we proactively help in formation to hopefully avoid these problems. And obviously screening people out is one way. That's been very effective the last 10, 15 years, really, from what we can see. But also, I guess sort of a serendipitous effect has been, hey, we can use counseling and psychology in a very positive way to help seminarians and religious develop virtues and habits in a better way. They may not be any risk at all of falling into some of the more grave situations that we're well aware of, but really for formation, this can be a great tool to help people develop humanly and be better, more virtuous priests, and that's going to help them be better priests and help, you know, spread God's kingdom and build it in a much more effective way.
That's right. The article spoke about this being an aspect of their human formation in the seminaries, and that seems to be a very important facet of seminary formation. This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to Father Charles Sikorski, president of the Institute for Psychological Sciences in Arlington, Virginia, and we're talking about how psychology is being made available in seminaries, both for seminaries themselves to avail themselves of the counseling services, or also for training in the psychological arena. So let's talk a little bit about your work at the Institute in training priests and seminarians. I know that you have a master's program that helps to do this, and more priests are entering that program. Tell us about it.
Yes, Jeanette. Well, so over the years, we've had just on-site programs, and we had several priests who've come here to study. But last year, we began an online master's program, and we geared it more not so much to form a clinical psychologist, but to form what we call helping professions. Okay, these are people who do not need a license to practice, but in the day-to-day, they're dealing with many different human situations, and one of the groups that's been very responsive to this new program have been priests who realize they need more formation to be able to be better priests in their pastoral work at their parishes, but also some who are working in priestly formation and who want to learn to be better formators at the seminary. And so this program began last October. It's been going very well. We've been great. We've been getting very good feedback from several of the priests who are in the program. It's something that we have three different times a year you can join, but they're learning basic psychology that's focused on Christian anthropology. There'll be courses that talk about some of the most common psychological anomalies or disorders that they're going to run into. It gives them, it teaches them better one-on-one relationship skills. So in one-on-one counseling situations, and so forth, those kinds of skills, teaching them also how to de-escalate a crisis, motivations, all those kinds of things, how to be a more empathetic listeners. One of the priests who's studied with us has said, he never had had a course on how to build more empathy into your listening skills. And he said he can see already a tremendous difference. So, those are some of the nuts and bolts of the program we have right now, and we're very excited about it. And it's great to see priests from all different dioceses and different religious orders all speaking very well and highly of what they received so far.
Yeah, that's great. I worked for many years in archdiocese and, kind of this institutional communications, and oftentimes I was a communications director, so I worked with many priests, and, whenever there was some kind of crisis in the parish, whatever conflict it might be, this aspect of just learning to listen to all the parties and being able to manage those crises, it's such practical help, and yet I wasn't always equipped to help them in that, and they weren't equipped in their own staffs to do that. So it sounds like this kind of work is very important, and I'm glad that many priests are availing themselves of it. Can you tell us a little bit, tell us the website where people can find out more information.
Right. So we have a website. It's called www.healourculture.com, healourculture.com, and that's a direct way to get to the website. Or you could also Google Catholic psychology, and I think IPS comes out on the top. And just one other point, we have, it's not just for priests. It's, we have probably over a third of our students right now are priests, but others in different kinds of helping professions, such as pregnancy center counselors. We have some of those. We have some teachers. We have a 911 operator, which I think is just great. Human resources folks. So check it out, healourculture.com. That's where you can get more information.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for being on the show today, and we will send our listeners to your website.
Well, thank you very much, Jeanette, and you keep up the great work that you're doing there at the Register. It's it's one of the beautiful resources we have as Catholics here in the United States to be informed and to really live out God's call in our lives.
Thank you, Father Charles.
Okay. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
So many people have told us that the National Catholic Register is one of the few sources of information they trust. They've also said they wish they had known about the Register sooner.
The misinformation in society has led us all to make mistakes in life, mistakes that could have been prevented with a better perspective. At the intersection of faith and culture, the catechetical nature of the Register provides the information that Catholics need, especially if, like me, they were not well catechized or converts to the faith that didn't have the necessary resources to begin with.
Please donate to the Register now. Your donation helps us reach out and provide crucial, faithful content to more Catholics, getting their news from otherwise unreliable sources. To donate, go to ncregister.com and click the Donate tab, or mail your donation to the National Catholic Register, P.O. Box 100699, Irondale, Alabama, 35210. Donate today and change "I wish I'd known" to "I know the truth."